today on Vox Talks Economics, how to create a society that can bounce back from a crisis. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so hit the button marked subscribe and follow us on Instagram and you'll get clips and previews too. Repeated environmental and economic crises in recent years are encouraging many people to ask fundamental questions about the way we have made society. Is this really the best way to run a planet, we ask, and should we be able to cope with shocks better? And that's the theme of The Resilient Society, a new book by Marcus Brunemeyer of Princeton University. He's also the director of the Bentheim Center for Finance there and a member of the CEPR. Marcus, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hi Tim, good to be with you.
Marcus, is this a book inspired by COVID or have you been thinking about this topic for longer?
It's probably both, or most of the book is actually about the webinar series I was conducting, and I tried to put all the insights from the webinar series into the book, but highlighting the theme of resilience. And of course, resilience is related to risk, and I was working a lot on systemic risk after the financial crisis. So it combines, you know, the resilience thoughts I had before with the insights I got from the webinar series.
When you're talking about resilience, are we talking about it in as personal resilience, the way we think about it, or resilience of the financial system? We're economists, we often talk about it that way. Or is it something bigger? Is it the resilience of society as a whole?
It is actually the latter. It's the resilience of society as a whole. So if you think about resilience as bouncing back, I think that's very important for individuals as well. But it's also important for systems like the financial system or also some mechanical system or networks. But it is really important for society to bounce back as a whole. And what's different about society is that, you know, you have feedback effects, which you have to avoid. So feedback loops and other phenomenons. The book is essentially primarily about this, explaining this feedback effects and making sure that we have a resilient society when we interact as a whole.
You contrast resilience with robustness. A lot of people would use those interchangeably. So what's the difference here?
So actually, that's quite different. So I think in order to contrast robustness with resilience, I often use this picture used by a French poet in the 17th century where he contrasts oak with a reed. And the oak is like robustness. It's, you know, when there's wind coming, the oak stands still, doesn't move much, and is really standing still, while the reed is moving constantly back and forth. It seems much more weaker and much more volatile. But when the wind becomes really, really strong, the oak falls over. The robustness barrier is broken, while the reed is still bouncing back and forth and comes back up. So it's the reed is much more resilient. And in this fable, La Fontaine, the poet, actually the oak talks to the reed, or the reed talks back, and the reed says, I bend and I bow, but I don't break. And I think that's part of resilience. And it's also related to some work I did earlier on the volatility paradox, something which seems very weak and volatile, but agile and moving back and forth and reacts to the circumstances, is actually much more resilient than something which is very rigid standing there. And it might be looks very strong, but when it breaks, it is broken.
So on that topic of bending but not breaking, in the last generation, we've had the global financial crisis, of course, in Europe. We had the sovereign debt crisis. We've now had COVID-19. We're not through it yet. But does that mean that our society is actually pretty resilient already?
We are resilient to a certain degree, and actually the more crises we face, the more resilient we will become. So essentially, having small crises makes you learn how to react to crisis, and that helps you to overcome future crises. So protecting everybody from being exposed to any crisis is actually not the right approach. So often we have a tendency to kick the can down the road in order to avoid small crises, and then a bigger crisis is building up, and then it actually makes things much worse. And what makes it so worse is that you don't know how to react to crisis because you have never been exposed to that. And one picture which is, you know, very useful here is when you raise kids, you actually give them some freedom. You also allow them to make mistakes because from the mistakes they'll learn and then they can live, become adults essentially, live through much higher challenges later on in life. Or if you compare the human immune system, if you grow up in a very sterile environment, you're actually thrown off by any bacteria or virus very easily. But if you don't live in such a sterile environment and you're exposed to certain bacteria, then actually you might be much more resilient should some, you know, new bacteria come along or some new virus come along. And so that's a fine balance one has to keep. But being not exposed to any crisis at all might be actually counterproductive and makes you less resilient.
One of the crises, I guess you could say, we have now is a mental health crisis. People are very anxious. They're worried about the risk of day-to-day life because of COVID-19. Would a more resilient society be a less risky one?
So I think there are some scarring effects from the current crisis, and we have to really watch out for these scarring effects. So there are certain elements when you can't bounce back. So, for example, when you hit and you fall in a trap and you can't bounce back, or you have these feedback loops I mentioned before, or you have tipping points, these risks we should to avoid. And, you know, if somebody has some mental health problems subsequently to the COVID crisis, that's something you should not experiment with. And that's not really something to be exposed to. So that's where actually the society as a whole comes together and can help people to overcome it. So that's where the societal aspects come on top of it, the individual aspects as well.
In your book, you make recommendations for how to make society more resilient. If we had those in place already over the last 10 or 15 years, what would we have had that would have made us better prepared for the crisis that we've gone through?
So actually, we had already many risk exposures, as I mentioned earlier, with the global financial crisis. And that's why the central banks could react so quickly in March 2020. So we could just use the playbook from the global financial crisis, adjust them slightly and use it again. And that's why, you know, the crisis could have been significantly worse than it actually played out. So on the financial side, I think we handled it fairly well. On the health side, we didn't prepare well enough. I think what's important is that you prepare well enough, so you're prepared, and you prepare in a flexible manner. So we don't know what the next shock will be, and you would like to have some redundancies which can be flexibly employed. So whatever the shock is, it might take a little bit to adjust the tools you have, but you can then bounce back. And I think the robustness approach is an illusion. You cannot prepare for all possible shocks which might occur. So it's better actually to say, okay, I have some redundancies which flexibly can be redeployed, whatever the shock will be, even though initially I will be hit, but then I have the ability to bounce back. And we showed some resilience, in particular if you think about the development of the new vaccines, which will have long-lasting benefits coming down the road. And this resilience, this innovative agile behavior, the willingness to change, to modify, to adjust, that's really what makes an agile and a resilient society.
But a preparation, redundancy, precautionary innovation that you're recommending, there's a bill for all of that, isn't there, Marcus? This has got to be paid for. Does that mean that a resilient society means we're going to be poorer?
I don't think so. So indeed, you need more redundancy. So the whole philosophy of just in time has to switch a little bit to just in case. So we have to have some redundancies. As I said earlier, we should have it in a flexible way. So the redundancies can be used for many different types of shocks, and even if it takes a little bit of time to readjust the redundancies. But on the other hand, if we have a mental frame where we go for a resilient society, we can also take some risks which are not associated with, you know, traps or feedback loops or tipping points. If we have risks where we can bounce back and take on these risks, they also give you a higher expected growth. So overall, actually, it might lead to more risk-taking, but smarter risk-taking, and it might hence lead to a higher expected growth rate. And this way, we benefit rather than have costs in the long run.
But how do we get from here to where you would like us to be? I mean, at the moment, there are a lot of CEOs, there are a lot of individuals who have the opportunity to put in place the building blocks of resilience, and clearly they're choosing not to. So do we give incentives? Do we have some kind of regulation or coercion?
I think the first step is the whole threat was underestimated. So just create the awareness that there are different types of risk out there, some from which you can bounce back and others from which you cannot bounce back. And some measures you can make the bounce back more likely and might not be too costly. So just increase the awareness. That's the first step. The second step, there might be certain areas where you have as a government a role to regulate, and other areas where you create some strategic reserves. So we have strategic reserves for oil and gas and other things. in order to bounce back more easily, overcome some shocks. And depending what the shock is, we might use different tools. But overall, I think the first line of defense is really to create the awareness and make the firms and the CEOs aware, and then they do it on their own, because to a large extent, they have their own incentives to be resilient, that the company is bouncing back as well. And this will help then the whole society too.
The crisis that's on everybody's mind at the moment, clearly, is climate change. So does your concept of resilience give us enough to be able to build the sort of sustainable economy that we're going to need?
Yeah, the whole chapter is devoted to climate change in the book. And sustainability, actually, if a society is not resilient or if a system is not resilient, then it's not sustainable. So resilience is a key part of sustainability. And what you need, of course, you can have a deterministic path which goes downhill all the time. That's also not sustainable. So in order to have something sustainable, it has to be resilient and there's no adverse path. So you need both elements, but resilience is a key element to that. And it also speaks, you know, should we take certain risks in developing new technologies like a Jupiterian approach? I think that's really important in order to solve the climate change. I think the answer is actually innovation. And that comes along with taking certain risks and ideally with risk with greater resilience. And I'm pretty optimistic that we will manage this risk and the challenges we all face.
Well, clearly this is going to be at the heart of the policy debate in the future. It is now. So thank you very much for talking about it today, Marcus.
Thank you, Tim.
The book is called The Resilient Society by Marcus Brunemeyer, of course, you've just heard from him, and it's published by Endeavour Literary Press. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. And if you want to know what you're going to be reading in journals 18 months from now, well, listen to a Vox Talk today. And there are literally hundreds of Vox Talks in the archives if you subscribe. So go on, do that. Don't miss out.